him. What I'd said. I had been awful. He'd told me those secrets, those vulnerabilities in confidence, and I'd thrown them in his face. Because I knew it had hurt him, and I knew I hadn't been talking about him, not really. Minutes passed, the night still cold enough to remind me that spring had not fully dawned, and I shivered, rubbing my arms as the moon drifted. I listened to the fountain and the city music. He didn't come. I wasn't sure what I'd even tell him. I knew he and Tamlin were different. Knew that Rhysand's protective anger tonight had been justified, that I would have had a similar reaction. I'd been bloodthirsty at the barest details of Moore's suffering, had wanted to punish them for it. I had known the risks. I had known I'd be sitting in his lap, touching him, using him. I'd been using him for a while now. And maybe I should tell him I didn't want or expect anything from him. Maybe Rhysand needed to flirt with me, taunt me, as much for a distraction and sense of normalcy as I did. And maybe I'd said what I had to him because I'd realized that I might very well be the person who wouldn't let anyone in. And tonight, when he'd recoiled after he'd seen how he affected me, it had crumpled something in my chest. I had been jealous of Cressida. I had been so profoundly unhappy on that barge because I'd wanted to be the one he smiled at like that. And I knew it was wrong, but I did not think Rhys would call me a whore if I wanted it. Wanted him. No matter how soon it was after Tamlin. Neither would his friends. Not when they had been called the same and worse. And learned to live and love beyond it. Despite it. So maybe it was time to tell Rhys that. To explain that I didn't want to pretend. I didn't want to write it off as a joke or a plan or a distraction. And it'd be hard, and I was scared and might be difficult to deal with, but I was willing to try, with him. To try to be something, together. Whether it was purely sex or more or something between or beyond them, I didn't know. We'd find out. I was healed, or healing, enough to want to try. If he was willing to try too. If he didn't walk away when I voiced what I wanted. Him. Not the High Lord. Not the most powerful male in Prithian's history. Just him. The person who had sent music into that cell. Who had picked up that knife in Amarantha's throne room to fight for me when no one else dared, who had kept fighting for me every day since, refusing to let me crumble and disappear into nothing. So I waited for him in the chilled, moonlit garden. But he didn't come. Rhys wasn't at breakfast. Or lunch. He wasn't in the townhouse at all. I'd even written him a note on the last piece of paper we'd used. I want to talk to you. I'd waited 30 minutes for the paper to vanish. But it stayed in my palm, until I threw it in the fire. I was pissed enough that I stalked into the streets, barely remarking that the day was balmy, sunny, that the very air now seemed laced with citrus and wildflowers and new grass. Now that we had the orb, he'd no doubt be in touch with the queens. Who would no doubt waste our time, just to remind us they were important, that they too had power. Part of me wished Rhys would crush their bones the way he'd done with Kier's the night before. I headed for Amran's apartment across the river, needing the walk to clear my head. Winter had indeed yielded to spring. By the time I was halfway there, my overcoat was slung over my arm, and my body was slick with sweat beneath my heavy cream sweater. I found Amran the same way I'd seen her the last time, hunched over the book, papers strewn around her. I set the blood on the counter. She said, without looking up, "Ah, the reason why Rhys bit my head off this morning." I leaned against the counter, frowning. Where has he gone off to?
To hunt whoever attacked you yesterday.
If they had ash arrows in their arsenal, I tried to soothe the worry that bit deep.
Do you think it was the summer court?
The blood ruby still sat on the floor, still used as a paperweight against the river breeze blowing in from the open windows. Varian's necklace was now beside her bed, as if she fell asleep looking at it.
Maybe,
Amryn said, dragging a finger along a line of text. She must be truly absorbed to not even bother with the blood. I debated leaving her to it. But she went on.
Regardless, it seems that our enemies have a track on Rhys's magic, which means they're able to find him when he winnows anywhere or if he uses his powers.
She at last looked up.
You lot are leaving Valaris in 2 days.
Rhys wants you stationed at one of the Illyrian war camps,
where you'll fly down to the human lands once the queens send word.
Why not today?
Amryn said, Because Starfall is tomorrow night. The first we've had together in 50 years, Rhys is expected to be here amongst his people.
What's Starfall?
Amryn's eyes twinkled.
Outside of these borders, the rest of the world celebrates tomorrow as Ninsar, the day of seeds and flowers.
I almost flinched at that. I hadn't realized just how much time had passed since I'd come here.
But Starfall, Amryn said, only at the Night Court can you witness it. Only within this territory is Starfall celebrated in lieu of the Ninsar revelry. The rest and the why of it you'll find out. It's better left as a surprise.
Well, that explained why people had seemed to already be preparing for a celebration of sorts. High fae and fairies hustling home with arms full of vibrant wildflower bouquets and streamers and food. The streets were being swept and washed, storefronts patched up with quick, skilled hands.
I asked, "Will we come back here once we leave?"
She returned to the book.
Not for a while.
Something in my chest started sinking. To an immortal, a while must be a long, long time. I took that as an invitation to leave, and headed for the door in the back of the loft. But Amryn said,
When Rhys came back, after Amarantha, he was a ghost. He pretended he wasn't, but he was. You made him come alive again.
Words stalled, and I didn't want to think about it. Not when whatever good I'd done, whatever good we'd done for each other, might have been wiped away by what I'd said to him.
So I said, He is lucky to have all of you.
No, she said softly, more gently than I'd ever heard.
We are lucky to have him, Feyre.
I turned from the door.
I have known many High Lords, Amryn continued, studying her paper. Cruel ones, cunning ones, weak ones, powerful ones, but never one that dreamed. Not as he does.
Dreams of what? I breathed.
Of peace. Of freedom. Of a world united. A world thriving. Of something better. For all of us.
He thinks he'll be remembered as the villain in the story.
She snorted.
But I forgot to tell him, I said quietly, opening the door. That the villain is usually the person who locks up the maiden and throws away the key.
Oh?
I shrugged. He was the one who let me out.
If you've moved elsewhere, I wrote after getting home from Amryn's apartment, you could have at least given me the keys to this house. I keep leaving the door unlocked when I go out. It's getting to be too tempting for the neighborhood burglars.
No response. The letter didn't even vanish. I tried after breakfast the next day, the morning of Starfall.
Cassian says you're sulking in the House of Wind.
What unhigh lord-like behavior? What am I training?
Again, no reply.
My guilt and whatever else it was started to shift. I could barely keep from shredding the paper as I wrote my third one after lunch.
Is this punishment? Or do people in your inner circle not get second chances if they piss you off? You're a hateful coward.
I was climbing out of the bath, the city abuzz with preparations for the festivities at sundown, when I looked at the desk where I'd left the letter and watched it vanish. Nuala and Caradwin arrived to help me dress, and I tried not to stare at the desk as I waited, waited and waited for the response. It didn't come. Chapter 44. But despite the letter, despite the mess between us, as I gaped at the mirror an hour later, I couldn't quite believe what stared back. I had been so relieved these past few weeks to be sleeping at all that I'd forgotten to be grateful that I was keeping down my food. The fullness had come back to my face, my body. What should have taken weeks longer as a human had been hurried along by the miracle of my immortal blood. And the dress? I'd never worn anything like it, and doubted I'd ever wear anything like it again. Crafted of tiny blue gems, so pale they were almost white, it clung to every curve and hollow before draping to the floor and pooling like liquid starlight. The long sleeves were tight, capped at the wrists with cuffs of pure diamond. The neckline grazed my collarbones, the modesty of it undone by how the gown hugged areas I supposed a female might enjoy showing off. My hair had been swept off my face with two combs of silver and diamond, then left to drape down my back. And I thought, as I stood alone in my bedroom, that I might have looked like a fallen star. Rhysand was nowhere to be found when I worked up the courage to go to the rooftop garden. The beating on the dress clinked and hissed against the floors as I walked through the nearly dark house, all of the lights softened or extinguished. In fact, the whole city had blown out its lights. A winged, muscled figure stood atop the roof, and my heart stumbled. But then he turned, just as the scent hit me, and something in my chest sank a bit as Cassian let out a low whistle.
I should have let Nuala and Caradwin dress me.
I didn't know whether to smile or wince.
You look rather good despite it.
He did. He was out of his fighting clothes and armor, sporting a black tunic cut to show off that warrior's body. His black hair had been brushed and smoothed, and even his wings looked cleaner. Cassian held his arms out. His siphons remained, a metal fingerless gauntlet that stretched beneath the tailored sleeves of his jacket.
Ready?
He'd kept me company these past 2 days, training me each morning. While he'd shown me more particulars on how to use an Illyrian blade, mostly how to disembowel someone with it, we'd chatted about everything. Our equally miserable lives as children. Hunting, food, everything. That is, except for the subject of Rhysand. Cassian had mentioned only once that Rhys was up at the house, and I supposed my expression had told him enough about not wanting to hear anything else. He grinned at me now.
With all those gems and beads, you might be too heavy to carry. I hope you've been practicing your winnowing in case I drop you.
Funny. I allowed him to scoop me into his arms before we shot into the sky. Winnowing might still evade me, but I wished I had wings, I realized. Great, powerful wings, so I might fly as they did. So I might see the world and all it had to offer. Below us, every lingering light winked out. There was no moon. No music flitted through the streets. Silence, as if waiting for something. Cassian soared through the quiet dark to where the House of Wind loomed. I could make out crowds gathered on the many balconies and patios, only from the faint gleam of starlight on their hair, then the clink of their glasses and low chatter as we neared. Cassian set me down on the crowded patio off the dining room, only a few revelers bothering to look at us. Dim bowls of phthalate inside the house illuminated spreads of food and endless rows of green bottles of sparkling wine atop the tables. Cassian was gone and returned before I missed him, pressing a glass of the latter into my hand. No sign of Rhysand. Maybe he'd avoid me the entire party. Someone called Cassian's name from down the patio, and he clapped me on the shoulder before striding off. A tall male, his face in shadow, clasped forearms with Cassian, his white teeth gleaming in the darkness. Azrael stood with the stranger already, his wings tucked in tight to keep revelers from knocking into them. He, Cassian, and Moore had all been quiet today. Understandably so. I scanned for signs of my other friends. The words sounded in my head. Was that what they were? Amryn was nowhere in sight, but I spotted a golden head at the same moment she spied me, and Moore breezed to my side. She wore a gown of pure white, little more than a slip of silk that showed off her generous curves. Indeed, a glance over her shoulder revealed Azrael staring blatantly at the back view of it, Cassian and the stranger already too deep in conversation to notice what had drawn the spymaster's attention. For a moment, the ravenous hunger on Azrael's face made my stomach tighten. I'd remembered feeling like that. Remembered how it felt to yield to it. How I'd come close to doing that the other night. Moore said, "It won't be long now." "Until what?" No one had told me what to expect, as they hadn't wanted to ruin the surprise of Starfall. "Until the fun." I surveyed the party around us. "This isn't the fun?" Moore lifted an eyebrow. "None of us really care about this part. Once it starts, you'll see." She took a sip of her sparkling wine. "That's some dress. You're lucky Amryn is hiding in her little attic, or she'd probably steal it right off you, the vain drake." "She won't take time off from decoding?" "Yes and no. Something about Starfall disturbs her, she claims. Who knows? She probably does it to be contrary." Even as she spoke, her words were distant, her face a bit tight. I said quietly, "Are you ready for tomorrow?" "Tomorrow, when we'd leave Valaris to keep anyone from noticing our movements in this area. Moore, Azrael had told me over breakfast that morning, would return to the Court of Nightmares to check in on her father's recovery. Probably not the best place to discuss our plans," but Moore shrugged. "I don't have any choice but to be ready. I'll come with you to the camp, then go my way afterward." "Cassian will be happy about that," I said, even if Azrael was the one trying his best not to stare at her. Moore snorted.
"Maybe."
I lifted a brow. "So you two..." Another shrug.
"Once. Well, not even. I was 17. He wasn't even a year older."
When everything had happened. But there was no darkness on her face as she sighed.
"Cauldron, that was a long time ago. I visited Rhys for 2 weeks when he was training in the war camp, and Cassian, Azrael, and I became friends. One night, Rhys and his mother had to go back to the Night Court, and Azrael went with them, so Cassian and I were left alone. Then that night, one thing led to another, and I wanted Cassian to be the one who did it. I wanted to choose."
A third shrug. I wondered if Azrael had wished to be the one she chose instead. If he'd ever admitted it to Moore. Or Rhys. If he resented that he'd been away that night, that Moore hadn't considered him.
"Rhys came back the next morning, and when he learned what had happened..."
She laughed under her breath.
We try not to talk about the incident. He and Cassian, I've never seen them fight like that. Hopefully I never will again. I know Reese wasn't pissed about my virginity, but rather the danger that losing it had put me in. Azriel was even angrier about it, though he let Reese do the walloping. They knew what my family would do for debasing myself with a bastard-born lesser fairy. She brushed a hand over her abdomen, as if she could feel the nail they'd spiked through it. They were right. "So you and Cassian," I said, wanting to move on from it, that darkness. "You were never together again after that?" "No," Moore said, laughing quietly. "I was desperate, reckless that night. I'd picked him not just for his kindness, but also because I wanted my first time to be with one of the legendary Illyrian warriors. I wanted to lie with the greatest of Illyrian warriors, actually. And I'd taken one look at Cassian and known. After I got what I wanted, after everything, I didn't like that it caused a rift with him and Reese, or even him and Az, so never again."
"And you were never with anyone after it?"
"Not the cold, beautiful Shadow Singer who tried so hard not to watch her with longing on his face." "I've had lovers," Moore clarified, "but I get bored. And Cassian has had them, too, so don't get that unrequited love, moony woo-woo look. He just wants what he can't have. And it's irritated him for centuries that I walked away and never looked back."
"Oh, it drives him insane," Reese said from behind me, and I jumped.
But the High Lord was circling me. I crossed my arms as he paused and smirked.
"You look like a woman again."
"You really know how to compliment females, cousin," Moore said, and patted him on the shoulder as she spotted an acquaintance and went to say hello. I tried not to look at Reese, who was in a black jacket, casually unbuttoned at the top so that the white shirt beneath, also unbuttoned at the neck, showed the tattoos on his chest peeking through. Tried not to look, and failed.
"Do you plan to ignore me some more?" I said coolly.
"I'm here now, aren't I? I wouldn't want you to call me a hateful coward again."
I opened my mouth, but felt all the wrong words start to come out. So I shut it and looked for Azriel or Cassian or anyone who might talk to me. Going up to a stranger was starting to sound appealing when Reese said a bit hoarsely,
"I wasn't punishing you, I needed time." I didn't want to have this conversation here, with so many people listening. So I gestured to the party and said,
"Will you please tell me what this gathering is about?" Rhysand stepped up behind me, snorting as he said into my ear,
"Look up." Indeed, as I did so, the crowd hushed.
"No speech for your guests?" I murmured.
"Easy. I just wanted it to be easy between us again." "Tonight's not about me, though my presence is appreciated and noted," he said. "Tonight's about that."
As he pointed, a star vaulted across the sky, brighter and closer than any I'd seen before. The crowd and city below cheered, raising their glasses as it passed right overhead, and only when it had disappeared over the curve of the horizon did they drink deeply. I leaned back a step into Reese, and quickly stepped away out of his heat and power and scent. We'd done enough damage in a similar position at the Court of Nightmares. Another star crossed the sky, twirling and twisting over itself, as if it were reveling in its own sparkling beauty. It was chased by another, and another, until a brigade of them were unleashed from the edge of the horizon, like 1,000 archers had loosed them from mighty bows. The stars cascaded over us, filling the world with white and blue light. They were like living fireworks, and my breath lodged in my throat as the stars kept on falling and falling. I'd never seen anything so beautiful. And when the sky was full with them, when the stars raced and danced and flowed across the world, the music began. Wherever they were, people began dancing, swaying and twirling, some grabbing hands and spinning, spinning, spinning to the drums, the strings, the glittering harps. Not like the grinding and thrusting of the Court of Nightmares, but joyous, peaceful dancing, for the love of sound and movement and life. I lingered with Rhysand at the edge of it, caught between watching the people dancing on the patio, hands upraised, and the stars streaming past, closer and closer until I swore I could have touched them if I'd leaned out. And there were Moore and Azrael, and Cassian, the three of them dancing together, Moore's head tipped back to the sky, arms up, the starlight gleaming on the pure white of her gown. Dancing as if it might be her last time, flowing between Azrael and Cassian like the three of them were one unit, one being. I looked behind me to find Rhys watching them, his face soft, sad. Separated for 50 years and reunited, only to be cleaved apart so soon to fight again for their freedom. Rhys caught my gaze and said, "Come, there's a better view, quieter." He held a hand out to me. That sorrow, that weight lingered in his eyes, and I couldn't bear to see it, just as I couldn't bear to see my three friends dancing together as if it was the last time they'd ever do it. Rhys led me to a small private balcony jutting from the upper level of the House of Wind. On the patios below, the music still played, the people still danced, the stars wheeling by, close and swift. He let go as I took a seat on the balcony rail. I immediately decided against it as I beheld the drop and backed away a healthy step. Rhys chuckled. "If you fell, you know I'd bother to save you before you hit the ground."
"But not until I was close to death?"
"Maybe."
I leaned a hand against the rail, peering at the stars whizzing past.
"As punishment for what I said to you?"
"I said some horrible things, too," he murmured.
"I didn't mean it," I blurted. "I meant it more about myself than you, and I'm sorry."
He watched the stars for a moment before he replied.
"You were right, though. I stayed away because you were right, though I'm glad to hear my absence felt like a punishment."
I snorted, but was grateful for the humor, for the way he'd always been able to amuse me. "Any news with the orb or the queens?"
"Nothing yet. We're waiting for them to deign to reply."
We were silent again, and I studied the stars. They're not stars at all."
"No."
Rhys came up beside me at the rail.
"Our ancestors thought they were, but they're just spirits on a yearly migration to somewhere. Why they picked this day to appear here, no one knows."
I felt his eyes upon me, and tore my gaze from the shooting stars. Light and shadow passed over his face. The cheers and music of the city, far, far below, were barely audible over the crowd gathered at the house. "There must be hundreds of them," I managed to say, dragging my stare back to the stars whizzing past.
"Thousands," he said. "They'll keep coming until dawn. Or I hope they will. There were less and less of them the last time I witnessed starfall."
Before Amarantha had locked him away.
"What's happening to them?"
I looked in time to see him shrug. Something twanged in my chest.
"I wish I knew. But they keep coming back despite it."
"Why?"
"Why does anyone cling to something?
Maybe they love wherever they're going so much that it's worth it. Maybe they'll keep coming back until there's only one star left. Maybe that one star will make the trip forever, out of the hope that someday, if it keeps coming back often enough, another star will find it again. I frowned at the wine in my hand. That's a very sad thought.
Indeed.
Rhys rested his forearms on the balcony edge, close enough for my fingers to touch if I dared. A calm, full silence enveloped us. Too many words. I still had too many words in me. I don't know how much time passed, but it must have been a while, because when he spoke again, I jolted.
Every year that I was under the mountain and Starfall came around, Amarantha made sure that I serviced her the entire night. Starfall is no secret, even to outsiders. Even the Court of Nightmares crawls out of the hewn city to look up at the sky. So she knew. She knew what it meant to me.
I stopped hearing the celebrations around us. I'm sorry. It was all I could offer.
I got through it by reminding myself that my friends were safe, that Valaris was safe. Nothing else mattered so long as I had that. She could use my body however she wanted. I didn't care.
So why aren't you down there with them? I asked, even as I tucked the horror of what had been done to him into my heart.
They don't know what she did to me on Starfall. I don't want it to ruin their night.
I don't think it would. They'd be happy if you let them shoulder the burden.
The same way you rely on others to help with your own troubles?
We stared at each other, close enough to share breath. And maybe all those words bottled up in me? Maybe I didn't need them right now. My fingers grazed his, warm and sturdy, patient, as if waiting to see what else I might do. Maybe it was the wine, but I stroked a finger down his. And as I turned to him more fully, something blinding and tinkling slammed into my face. I reeled back, crying out as I bent over, shielding my face against the light that I could still see against my shut eyes. Rhys let out a startled laugh. A laugh? And when I realized that my eyes hadn't been singed out of their sockets, I whirled on him. I could have been blinded, I hissed, shoving him. He took a look at my face and burst out laughing again. Real laughter. Open and delighted and lovely. I wiped at my face, and when I pulled my hands down, I gaped. Pale green light, like drops of paint, glowed in flecks on my hand. Splattered star spirit. I didn't know if I should be horrified or amused or disgusted. When I went to rub it off, Rhys caught my hands.
Don't, he said, still laughing. It looks like your freckles are glowing. My nostrils flared, and I went to shove him again, not caring if my new strength knocked him off the balcony. He could summon wings. He could deal with it.
He sidestepped me, veering toward the balcony rail, but not fast enough to avoid the careening star that collided with the side of his face. He leaped back with a curse. I laughed, the sound rasping out of me. Not a chuckle or snort. But a cackling laugh. And I laughed again and again as he lowered his hands from his eyes. The entire left side of his face had been hit. Like heavenly war paint, that's what it looked like. I could see why he didn't want me to wipe mine away. Rhys was examining his hands, covered in the dust, and I stepped toward him, peering at the way it glowed and glittered. He went still as death as I took one of his hands in my own and traced the star shape on the top of his palm, playing with the glimmer and shadows until it looked like one of the stars that had hit us. His fingers tightened on mine, and I looked up. He was smiling at me. and looked so un-High Lord-like with the glowing dust on the side of his face that I grinned back. I hadn't even realized what I'd done until his own smile faded and his mouth parted slightly. "Smile again," he whispered. I hadn't smiled for him, ever, or laughed. Under the mountain, I had never grinned, never chuckled, and afterward, and this male before me, my friend, for all that he had done, I had never given him either. Even when I had just painted something on him, for him, I'd painted again. So I smiled at him, broad and without restraint. "You're exquisite," he breathed. The air was too tight, too close between our bodies, between our joined hands. But I said, "You owe me two thoughts. Back from when I first came here, tell me what you're thinking." Reese rubbed his neck. "You want to know why I didn't speak or see you? Because I was so convinced you'd throw me out on my ass. I just..." He dragged a hand through his hair and huffed a laugh. "I figured hiding was a better alternative." Who would have thought the High Lord of the Night Court could be afraid of an illiterate human, I purred. He grinned, nudging me with an elbow. "That's one," I pushed. "Tell me another thought." His eyes fell on my mouth. "I'm wishing I could take back that kiss under the mountain." I sometimes forgot that kiss, when he'd done it to keep Amarantha from knowing that Tamlin and I had been in the Forgotten Hall, tangled up together. Rhysand's kiss had been brutal, demanding, and yet... why? His gaze settled on the hand I'd painted instead, as if it were easier to face. "Because I didn't make it pleasant for you, and I was jealous and pissed off, and I knew you hated me." "Dangerous territory," I warned myself. "No, honesty. That's what it was. Honesty and trust. I'd never had that with anyone." Reese looked up, meeting my gaze. And whatever was on my face, I think it might have been mirrored on his, the hunger and longing and surprise. I swallowed hard, traced another line of stardust along the inside of his powerful wrist. I didn't think he was breathing. Do you want to dance with me?" I whispered. He was silent for long enough that I lifted my head to scan his face, but his eyes were bright, silver-lined.
"You want to dance?"
he rasped, his fingers curling around mine. I pointed with my chin toward the celebration below. "Down there. With them." Where the music beckoned, where life beckoned, where he should spend the night with his friends, and where I wanted to spend it with them too, even with the strangers in attendance. I did not mind stepping out of the shadows, did not mind even being in the shadows to begin with, so long as he was with me. My friend through so many dangers, who had fought for me when no one else would, even myself.
"Of course I'll dance with you," Reese said, his voice still raw. "All night, if you wish."
"Even if I step on your toes?"
"Even then."
He leaned in, brushing his mouth against my heated cheek. I closed my eyes at the whisper of a kiss, at the hunger that ravaged me in its wake, that might ravage Prithian. And all around us, as if the world itself were indeed falling apart, stars rained down. Bits of stardust glowed on his lips as he pulled away, as I stared up at him, breathless, while he smiled. The smile the world would likely never see. The smile he'd given up for the sake of his people, his lands. He said softly, "I am... very glad I met you, Feyre. I blinked away the burning in my eyes. Come on, I said, tugging on his hand. Let's go join the dance.
Chapter 45. The Illyrian war camp deep in the northern mountains was freezing. Apparently spring was still little more than a whisper in the region. Mor winnowed us all in, Rhysand and Cassian flanking us. We had danced, all of us together, and I had never seen Rhys so happy, laughing with Azriel, drinking with Mor, bickering with Cassian. I danced with each of them, and when the night had shifted toward dawn and the music became soft and honeyed, I had let Rhys take me in his arms and dance with me, slowly, until the other guests had left, until Mor was asleep on a settee in the dining room, until the gold disk of the sun gilded Valaris. He'd flown me back to the townhouse through the pink and purple and gray of the dawn, both of us silent, and had kissed my brow once before walking down the hall to his own room. I didn't lie to myself about why I waited for 30 minutes to see if my door would open, or to at least hear a knock, but nothing. We were bleary-eyed but polite at the lunch table hours later, Mor and Cassian unusually quiet, talking mostly to Amryn and Azriel, who had come to bid us farewell. Amryn would continue working on the book until we received the second half, if we received it. The Shadow Singer was heading out to gather information and manage his spies stationed at the other courts and attempting to break into the human one. I managed to speak to them, but most of my energy went into not looking at Rhysand, or thinking about the feeling of his body pressed to mine as we danced for hours, that brush of his mouth on my skin. I'd barely been able to fall asleep because of it. Traitor. Even if I'd left Tamlin, I was a traitor. I'd been gone for 2 months. Just 2. In fairy terms, it was probably considered less than a day. Tamlin had given me so much, done so many things for me and my family. And here I was, wanting another male, even as I hated Tamlin for what he'd done, how he'd failed me. Traitor. The word continued echoing in my head as I stood at Moore's side, Rhys and Cassian a few steps ahead, and peered out at the wind-blown camp. Mor had barely given Azriel more than a brief embrace before bidding him goodbye. And for all the world, the spymaster looked like he didn't care, until he gave me a swift, warning look. I was still torn between amusement and outrage at the assumption I'd stick my nose into his business, indeed. Built near the top of a forested mountain, the Illyrian camp was all bare rock and mud, interrupted only by crude, easy-to-pack tents centered around large fire pits. Near the tree line, a dozen permanent buildings had been erected of the gray mountain stone. Smoke puffed from their chimneys against the brisk, cloudy morning, occasionally swirled by the passing wings overhead. So many winged males soaring past on their way to other camps or in training. Indeed, on the opposite end of the camp, in a rocky area that ended in a sheer plunge off the mountain, were the sparring and training rings. Racks of weapons were left out to the elements. In the chalk-painted rings, males of all ages now trained with sticks and swords and shields and spears, fast, lethal, brutal. No complaints, no shouts of pain. There was no warmth here, no joy. Even the houses at the other end of the camp had no personal touches, as if they were used only for shelter or storage. And this was where Rhys, Azriel, and Cassian had grown up, where Cassian had been cast out to survive on his own. It was so cold that even bundled in my fur-lined leather I was shivering. I couldn't imagine a child going without adequate clothing or shelter for a night, much less 8 years. Moore's face was pale, tight. "I hate this place," she said under her breath,
the heat of it clouding the air in front of us.
It should be burned to the ground.
Cassian and Rhys were silent as a tall, broad-shouldered older male approached, flanked by five other Illyrian warriors, wings all tucked in, hands within casual reach of their weapons.
No matter that Rhys could rip their minds apart without lifting a finger.
They each wore siphons of varying colors on the backs of their hands, the stones smaller than Azriel and Cassian's, and only one, not like the seven apiece that my two friends wore to manage their tremendous power. The male in front said,
"Another camp inspection? Your dog," he jerked his chin at Cassian, "was just here the other week. The girls are training."
Cassian crossed his arms.
"I don't see them in the ring."
"They do chores first,"
the male said, shoulders pushing back and wings flaring slightly.
"Then when they've finished, they get to train."
A low snarl slipped past Moore's mouth, and the male turned our way. He stiffened. Moore flashed him a wicked smile.
"Hello, Lord Devlin."
The leader of the camp, then. He gave her a dismissive once-over and looked back to Rhys. Cassian's warning growl rumbled in my stomach. Rhys said at last,
"Pleasant as it always is to see you, Devlin, there are two matters at hand. First, the girls, as you were clearly told by Cassian, are to train before chores, not after. Get them out on the pitch. Now."
I shuddered at the pure command in that tone. He continued,
"Second, we'll be staying here for the time being. Clear out my mother's old house. No need for a housekeeper. We'll look after ourselves."
"The house is occupied by my top warriors."
"Then unoccupy it," Rhysand said simply, "and have them clean it before they do." The voice of the High Lord of the Night Court, who delighted in pain and made his enemies tremble. Devlin sniffed at me. I poured every bit of cranky exhaustion into holding his narrowed gaze.
"Another like that creature you bring here? I thought she was the only one of her ilk."
"Amryn," Rhys drawled, "sends her regards, and as for this one..."
I tried not to flinch away from meeting his stare.
"She's mine," he said quietly, but viciously enough that Devlin and his warriors nearby heard. "And if any of you lay a hand on her, you lose that hand, and then you lose your head."
I tried not to shiver, as Cassian and Moore showed no reaction at all.
"And once Feyre is done killing you," Rhys smirked, "then I'll grind your bones to dust."
I almost laughed, but the warriors were now assessing the threat Rhys had established me as, and coming up short with answers. I gave them all a small smile anyway, one I'd seen Amryn make 100 times. Let them wonder what I could do if provoked.
"We're heading out," Rhys said to Cassian and Moore, not even bothering to dismiss Devlin before walking toward the tree line. "We'll be back at nightfall."
He gave his cousin a look.
"Try to stay out of trouble, please. Devlin hates us the least of the warlords, and I don't feel like finding another camp." Mother above, the others must be unpleasant if Devlin was the mildest of them. Moore winked at us both.
"I'll try."
Rhys just shook his head and said to Cassian,
"Check on the forces, then make sure those girls are practicing like they should be. If Devlin or the others object, do what you have to."
Cassian grinned in a way that showed he'd be more than happy to do exactly that. He was the High Lord's general, and yet Devlin called him a dog. I didn't want to imagine what it had been like for Cassian without that title growing up. Then finally, Rhys looked at me again, his eyes shuttered.
"Let's go."
"You heard from my sisters?"
A shake of the head. "No. Azriel is checking today if they received a response. You and I?"
The wind rustled his hair as he smirked.
"We're going to train.
Where? He gestured to the sweeping land beyond, to the forested steppes he'd once mentioned.
Away from any potential casualties.
He offered his hand as his wings flared, his body preparing for flight. But all I heard were those two words he'd said, echoing against the steady beat of traitor, traitor.
She's mine.
Being in Reese's arms again, against his body, was a test of stubbornness. For both of us. To see who'd speak about it first. We'd been flying over the most beautiful mountains I'd ever seen. Snowy and flecked with pines, heading toward rolling steppes beyond them when I said, "You're training female Illyrian warriors?"
"Trying to."
Reese gazed across the brutal landscape.
"I banned wing-clipping a long, long time ago, but at the more zealous camps, deep within the mountains, they do it. And when Amarantha took over, even the milder camps started doing it again, to keep their women safe, they claimed. For the past 100 years, Cassian has been trying to build an aerial fighting unit amongst the females, trying to prove that they have a place on the battlefield. So far, he's managed to train a few dedicated warriors, but the males make life so miserable that many of them left. As for the girls in training, a hiss of breath. It's a long road. But Devlin is one of the few who even lets the girls train without a tantrum."
I'd hardly call disobeying orders without a tantrum.
"Some camps issued decrees that if a female was caught training, she was to be deemed unmarriageable. I can't fight against things like that. Not without slaughtering the leaders of each camp and personally raising each and every one of their offspring."
"And yet your mother loved them, and you three wear their tattoos."
"I got the tattoos in part for my mother, in part to honor my brothers, who fought every day of their lives for the right to wear them."
"Why do you let Devlin speak to Cassian like that?"
"Because I know when to pick my fights with Devlin, and I know Cassian would be pissed if I stepped in to crush Devlin's mind like a grape when he could handle it himself."
A whisper of cold went through me. "Have you thought about doing it?"
"I did just now. But most camp lords never would have given the three of us a shot at the blood rite. Devlin let a half-breed and two bastards take it, and did not deny us our victory."
Pine dusted with fresh snow blurred beneath us. "What's the blood rite?"
"So many questions today."
I squeezed his shoulder hard enough to hurt, and he chuckled.
"You go unarmed into the mountains, magic banned, no siphons, wings bound, with no supplies or clothes beyond what you have on you. You and every other Illyrian male who wants to move from novice to true warrior. A few hundred head into the mountains at the start of the week. Not all come out at the end."
The frost-kissed landscape rolled on forever, unyielding as the warriors who ruled over it. "Do you kill each other?"
"Most try to. For food and clothes, for vengeance, for glory between feuding clans. Devlin allowed us to take the right, but also made sure Cassian, Azrael, and I were dumped in different locations."
"What happened?"
"We found each other. Killed our way across the mountains to get to each other. Turns out, a good number of Illyrian males wanted to prove they were stronger, smarter than us. Turns out they were wrong."
I dared a look at his face. For a heartbeat, I could see it. Blood-spattered, savage, fighting and slaughtering to get to his friends, to protect and save them. Reese set us down in a clearing, the pine trees towering so high they seemed to caress the underside of the heavy gray clouds passing on the swift wind.
"So, you're not using magic, but I am," I said, taking a few steps from him. "Our enemy is keyed in on my powers. You, however, remain invisible."
He waved his hand.
"Let's see what all your practicing has amounted to."
I didn't feel like it. I just said, When did you meet Tamlin? I knew what Rhysand's father had done. I hadn't let myself think too much about it. About how he'd killed Tamlin's father and brothers, and mother. But now, after last night, after the Court of Nightmares, I had to know. Rhys's face was a mask of patience.
Show me something impressive and I'll tell you. Magic for answers.
I know what sort of game you're playing. I cut myself off at the hint of a smirk.
Very well.
I held out my hand before me, palm cupped, and willed silence into my veins, my mind. Silence and calm and wait, like being underwater. In my hand, a butterfly of water flapped and danced. Rhys smiled a bit, but the amusement died as he said,
Tamlin was younger than me, born when the war started. But after the war, when he'd matured, we got to know each other at various court functions. Rhys clenched his jaw. He seemed decent for a High Lord's son. Better than Baron's brood at the Autumn Court. Tamlin's brothers were equally as bad, though. Worse. And they knew Tamlin would take the title one day. And to a half-breed Illyrian who'd had to prove himself, defend his power, I saw what Tamlin went through. I befriended him. Sought him out whenever I was able to get away from the war camps or court. Maybe it was pity, but I taught him some Illyrian techniques.
Did anyone know? He raised his brows, giving a pointed look to my hand.
I scowled at him and summoned songbirds of water,
letting them flap around the clearing as they'd flown around my bathing room at the summer court.
Cassian and Azrael knew, Rhys went on. My family knew, and disapproved.
His eyes were chips of ice.
But Tamlin's father was threatened by it, by me. And because he was weaker than both me and Tamlin, he wanted to prove to the world that he wasn't. My mother and sister were to travel to the Illyrian war camp to see me. I was supposed to meet them halfway, but I was busy training a new unit and decided to stay.
My stomach turned over and over and over, and I wished I had something to lean against, as Rhys said.
Tamlin's father, brothers, and Tamlin himself set out into the Illyrian wilderness, having heard from Tamlin, from me, where my mother and sister would be, that I had plans to see them. I was supposed to be there. I wasn't. And they slaughtered my mother and sister anyway.
I began shaking. Eyes burning. I didn't know what I was trying to deny or erase or condemn.
It should have been me, he said.
And I understood. Understood what he'd said that day I'd wept before Cassian in the training pit.
They put their heads in boxes and sent them down the river, to the nearest camp. Tamlin's father kept their wings as trophies. I'm surprised you didn't see them pinned in the study.
I was going to vomit. I was going to fall to my knees and weep. But Rhys looked at the menagerie of water animals I'd crafted and said,
What else?
Perhaps it was the cold, perhaps it was his story, but hoarfrost cracked in my veins and the wild song of a winter wind howled in my heart. I felt it then, how easy it would be to jump between them, join them together, my powers. Each one of my animals halted midair and froze into perfectly carved bits of ice. One by one they dropped to the earth and shattered. They were one. They had come from the same dark origin, the same eternal well of power. Once, long ago, before language was invented and the world was new. Rhys merely continued,
When I heard, when my father heard,
I wasn't wholly truthful to you when I told you under the mountain that my father killed Tamlin's father and brothers. I went with him, helped him. We winnowed.